Welcome to Inside Windows Phone. This week we are again with Rob Tiffany.
Imagine that.
Still special.
I'm trying to stay special.
Yeah. And you've grown so much since last time we met.
You know, not only is am I growing as a human being, but I've been taking some special vitamins to help me there too. So, you know.
Oh yeah, share the recipe.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, growing in my knowledge of mobility too.
Yeah, so this time we want to talk about Meep, you call it.
Yeah, what is that?
I have no clue. I heard it at the Gartner Symposium as well.
Yeah.
I was talking about this stuff.
Right.
Explain it to me, please.
All right. So, we all know who Gartner is. And just like there's Gartner and IDC and Forrester and all kinds of different organizations, they're analysts and stuff, and they take a look at the market. So Gartner in particular has magic quadrants for everything.
Yes.
And so we all know about those. So one of them, and it's actually changed its name a few times, but one of them is called the Mobile Enterprise Application Platform, or MEAP for short. Prior to that, it used to be an even more complicated name or strange name. It used to be called Multi-Channel Access Gateway. Yeah. And so they changed it. It's actually even changed recently to MADP.
MADP.
Mobile Application Development Platform. So anyway, we'll try to keep it simple. We'll just say MEAP now, especially because Larry Lieberman likes it whenever I say MEAP. It reminds me him of one of those cartoons. I forget.
Something.
Yeah, it might have been another one, though. I think someone actually says MEAP, but I usually think of Roadrunner myself.
Yeah.
So anyway, so yes, there's this MEAP thing. You and I are so focused on enterprise mobility and mobile app dev and the enterprise, and it's different than consumer app dev.
It is different. And in some regards, it's the same. When we talk, it's building apps. Yeah, it's the same, but there are different aspects, different scenarios, which are much more important for an enterprise developer or enterprise per se than a consumer app.
Right, absolutely. So the reason we'll bring MEAP in, and just Gartner, for instance, right now, you know, every year, for 2013, what's the top 10 list of what CIOs are caring about? And so this year, number two is mobility.
Yes.
And enterprise mobility is really starting to take off now.
That's the reason why we talk about this stuff on Inside Windows Phone now, right?
Absolutely. We've got the dream team here. Anyway, so since it's taking off and it's such a big deal, within that number two, mobility, I think maybe BI, big data, might be number one this year, I don't know, or it could be the cloud, it all bounces around. But inside there is this kind of a one-sentence imperative, a statement that basically says, CIOs want to take data from any back-end system they have and get it out to any device, out to their employees, to empower them to run their business.
Yes.
So real simple, or it sounds simple, you know.
It is simple, you just buy a bunch of new products.
Yeah, we'll just throw
spend a lot of money, throw more money at it, and then start doing this.
We can write lots of code, buy lots of servers, do lots of everything. Well, normally, guys like you and I would probably do exactly that, or especially consultants would do it, because that means lots of billable hours.
Exactly.
Gartner is...
Sales guys like it.
Targets. Oh, yeah.
Do you have a sales target?
No.
Then we neither.
Okay. Well, maybe I do.
So we're not here about selling a lot of servers and a lot of products.
No, but I love servers.
Yes, you do.
I do. I do love servers, you know.
Especially the ones companies already have.
Yeah, like Windows for Workgroups. Is that, no, never mind. Anyway.
It was.
Okay, I used it as a server. I replaced Novell 3.12, I think, with Windows for Workgroups.
Last
week. NetBUI.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, good times.
Modern guy.
Not very routable.
No.
Well. Anyway, so back to what are we talking about?
MEAP.
Oh, MEAP, right.
And what Gartner is thinking about and stuff. And I heard them talking about like web scale IT.
Yeah, that's a
big... That's the term I heard, yeah.
Absolutely. So you're right, they just had the symposium.
Yes.
So one of the big, another big mega trend, because there's obviously lots of cross currents happening at the same time, is yes, this web scale IT. It's not enough for your IT department to build systems that can scale to work group solutions for 50 people or 1,000 people or even 10,000 people.
Yeah.
They want... They're seeing, and the drive in IT is to provide this type of scale that you think of when you think of the largest web properties out there and cloud-based systems or search engines that with tens of thousands of servers. And it's also not just lots of servers. It's techniques that you follow to build web scale IT so that you don't paint yourself in a corner and build something that works well until 5,000 users, and then the building's on fire and it doesn't work anymore. And you have to call the bat phone.
So you mean we have to think about our solutions, maybe do some kind of architecture and design?
Yes. Okay. I know that's crazy talk. I know you just want to start writing code and it'll probably all work out.
Yeah, for the first few customers, I guess.
You know, my experience, you know, it's weird talking about servers and architecture. I've been a mobile guy for a long time, and I have customers all around the world, though. I talk about the bat phone or the red phone or something. I still get calls, no matter what job I'm actually doing at Microsoft that's unrelated to going and helping people. But I get calls all the time, and I get on a plane and I go help these folks. And as the mobile guy, you'd think I'd be spending all my time helping them on the mobile device. They wrote some bad code or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? I spend 70, 80, 90% of my time on the server. The biggest problems I see people when they're trying to do enterprise mobility is they do not build systems that can scale and perform under high load. What was good enough when you and I were building Access 2.0 and Visual Basic 3 apps to support 50 people, doesn't cut anymore, especially with mobile devices. When you're trying to reach your own employees, very large companies may have hundreds of thousands of employees they have to support. And then those companies, if they're building B2C apps to reach their customers or their prospective customers, and they're bringing telemetry back to their systems, and it's not just some lightweight marketing app, it's real.
Exactly.
It's got to scale to potentially millions of devices. And so you've got to be able to build for that in advance. So back to our imperative. All of these back-end systems that all our customers have, taking the right data from the right systems, getting out to their employees to empower them. How do we do that without writing tons of one-off code, buying all kinds of different proprietary systems, and being able to reuse training, reuse code, reuse skills, all that stuff to save money? You want to train your employees one time and be able to rebuild. And so ROI is a big thing. Yeah. So,
yeah. So far, we see this mobile talks mostly about, okay, how are you going to build the app? User experience is important. You don't want to train your users by how they use the apps. That's typical for mobile things. But
sure.
That's the front end, right? That's just the end point.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So the hard part for a lot of these enterprise systems are not the front end. It's an interesting job, and it's hard enough as it is, I guess. But
yeah.
Let's talk about the complex stuff and the backend as well.
Outstanding. Okay. All right. So let's parse that sentence. We're going to start with the backend systems. And so the first slide I have up on the screen here kind of shows you this kind of a cloud image here. And it basically shows a lot of different backend systems, you know, little circles. You know, you see EDI, you know. It could be grabbing data off a TIBCO bus. It could be exchanging flat files with a mainframe. Maybe it's a web service call to Salesforce.com. A database. It could be DB2, Oracle, Teradata, whatever, you know. And then, you know, again, it could be SAP. It could be Dynamics. I got to get data from these systems. Some of those systems are designed for web scale. Mm-hmm. Not very many of them, but some of them are designed where clients can hit them directly. But most of them are not. And not for a few reasons. One of the reasons is something geeky like wire protocols. Like this database or this backend system has a binary protocol that is used to talk to things. Well, we know that not every device can talk to those protocols. They talk to open things, you know. Other systems also are plagued by the problems that they can't scale. They, you know, they were built, you know, it's one thing to make something work, and it's another thing to make it work for you and a billion of your best friends,
yeah,
potentially.
Yeah, the scenario is that the bank, they use a mainframe to do all those transactions, and a couple of times a month, people are checking if their salary is already on their account.
Yeah. The
system goes down because it's too much load.
Too much load, yeah. Exactly.
The system wasn't built for that kind of
right.
usage.
Yeah. So we might need to step in and help those systems to have a web wireless-friendly protocol that any device can consume. Mm-hmm. And we also need to help scalability for those backend systems that were not designed to just be pounded on by thousands or millions of devices directly. So we need to do these adapters and we gotta create a server facade. So if you look at kind of the slide there, you see I'm in this case, I'm talking about SQL Server Integration Services adapters, SSIS, using SQL Server to reach out to plug into all these backend systems. I know there's a lot of ways to skin that cat. I could write unique code to talk to every backend system, but then you're spending more time and lots of money. Time to market goes, that's not good. So, because you want to train once. And so the great thing with SSIS, we have these data tools. It's part of Visual Studio. And that's kind of another part of our story here, is you're going to be able to use one IDE, Visual Studio, on your devices, on your middleware, on your back-end systems, everywhere. Reuse, reuse, reuse.
Yeah, Visual Studio, your ALM tools you already have, probably.
Absolutely.
But the adapters and SQL Server, that's like part of the default SKU, right?
It is. Yeah.
Remember, no sales target?
No sales target. You know, I had a feeling you were about to ask me about BizTalk.
That's the next question. I heard adapters, and I'm thinking BizTalk.
People are always saying, hey, yeah. I thought BizTalk is the way you connect to a million different things.
Exactly.
It's our Swiss Army knife for Microsoft.
What's the difference between BizTalk and the SQL adapter?
BizTalk is designed for some complex orchestrations, which is great stuff. Mm-hmm. And it has adapters to take one system over here and convert the data and transform it and send it to another system. And do really complex things. And in BizTalk, I'm not saying it's not a good candidate for it, but the way I want to be able to use SQL for other capabilities that it has for some scale out is something that is not part of BizTalk. And so for what I want to do, I want to use SQL instead. The great thing to know, though, is SQL Server out of the box just has dozens and dozens of built-in adapters. And then there's a whole community of third parties that actually build plug-in adapters that talk to other systems that
maybe. Oh, I didn't know that. So many.
Yeah. And actually BizTalk adapters. There's a few years ago we came out with these WCF-based adapters for BizTalk.
Yep.
They'll work as well.
Yep. Okay.
So and that's how there's a lot of MEAP companies, MEAP vendors out there. And one of their biggest differentiators when they're competing against each other is back-end adapters. That's either their strongest or weakest point.
Yeah.
Because the value disappears rapidly if you can't talk to a lot of back-end systems. Even if you have great value on the client and other places, if you don't have tons of adapters, you're really not here to play.
It's a bit of a hidden gem in SQL Server, right?
It is a hidden gem. Yeah. It is a hidden gem. And so, data tools in Visual Studio, working with SSIS, imagine, I'm just going to draw in space here, but instead of writing code, you're going to train people to basically drag and drop from the kind of a toolbox, and like a source, which might be DB2, and a destination, which will be SQL Server. And you'll be pulling tables over. Like, for instance, let's say I'm building a system. I need to get customer data from a CRM system, and I need to get product data from an ERP system back in. And so I'm aggregating, and people have talked about, we've done web services, and we've done SOAP and REST, and JSON and XML now for a while. We've talked about things like composite applications, SOA stuff, right? So we're building a composite application. I'm grabbing data from different back-end systems to build a new solution for a mobile solution. And you need to be able to do this multiple times the same way. So when I'm using the data tools, that drag and drop from this back-end to SQL and that back-end to SQL, guess what? It looks the same. It's not learning something totally different each time. So a consistent experience and a rapid experience. If you need to transform that data, if the data looks a little strange on some backend system that doesn't look right to how you want it on the endpoint, we've got the ability to do transformations. The other great thing is if you know me very well, I always feel the need for speed.
Yeah.
Right? And so speed has a direct correlation with scalability, actually, and that's what it's all about here. So our SSIS adapters, like you see here, it's our extract, transform, and load capability, ETL. Well, guess what? We have the world record for ETL performance. We have in-memory ETL, and it's insanely fast. So when you're thinking about the adapters, think about we got more, and ours are faster. That's all good.
Yep.
So we're going to pull data in, get them into staging tables in SQL Server as we build our mobile solution. So that's kind of our first step, back in to our mobile middleware. And when I define Microsoft's mobile middleware for this scenario, it's a combination of SQL Server and IIS working together. So I'm going to move ahead to the next slide here that we can talk about. And this is where we start doing some crazy scale stuff
exactly.
with SQL Server.
So we have our data in the database. That's all good. And let's be honest, that could still be a lot of work, right? Figuring out which data we need to combine and how to map that. But let's say we pass that step. We're marketeers now. It's easy.
He just switched to marketecture from architecture.
Yeah, marketecture. It's easy. So say we have all this data now in SQL Server, done through all these adapters.
Right.
Now we need to scale.
So now we need to scale. This is where we also have a great differentiator from some of our MEAP competitors. Again, some of them can make it real easy to point and click your way to a solution, but can they scale to web scale? To make all right.
Yeah.
So, and again, this whole time I'm just talking about our on-premise solution. We also have an Azure-based way of doing this as well. So you'll see here in the middle, you might be wondering, what's a SQL Server publisher and what are all these subscribers? And you see things replication. If you think about some of your favorite social networks where there's you and hundreds of millions of your best friends all at the same time, and yet the website is so fast, and you're wondering, how can they do that? Well, part of that is, obviously, we're not having a 100 million people hit a single database at the same time. You have to scale out that database. I know if we go way back in time when we thought we were really getting good about scalability, we would scale out web servers and load balance and have load balancers. And we thought that's all we needed to do, but we still pointed at one database. But at some point, even the best, most powerful database on the planet is going to run out of gas. It can only take so much until you saturate it.
The fastest query.
There you go.
It's a query you don't make.
Actually, don't make that query if you don't have to.
But sometimes you have to.
Sometimes you have to. Yeah. So the best way is to, how do you scale out? We know how to scale up database servers. We're throwing CPUs and RAM
at
it.
Buy a bigger box.
Exactly. So the biggest box you can, but you will hit a saturation point. So you need to scale out. The great thing is, you may or may not know, that we can scale out SQL Server. We can create a shared nothing architecture, horizontally partitioning databases. You may have heard the term sharding, for instance.
Yep.
A lot of NoSQL systems that are used on huge internet scale systems use sharding. And so I'll talk about that. All that happens through a capability just called replication. So I've done a little bit of replication in my day. Okay, maybe too much replication. And SQL servers had replication built into the engine since the mid-90s. We have merge replication, which takes different sides of data and uses triggers to reconcile things when they're offline for a while. It was originally designed for branch offices that might be disconnected for long periods of time over slow frame relay. Who remembers that? And then we have transactional
connections.
And then we have transactional replication that uses the log, transaction log, to keep things. The whole gist of them is I need to get copies of data from here to here, and it could be around the globe. And I need to get consistency in data eventually, right? So what I want to do here is, while we've used replication in the past to sync data right down to devices, and you can still do that, I'm going to use replication for sharding. So we have publishers and subscribers. So the database that we just pulled over from the backend system is the publisher, and we really have an easy point-and-click solution. Choose the database, choose the tables. You can create custom filtering. And then you have these subscribers. These are going to be our replicas, our shards of data. So at the highest level, you could say, well, I'm just going to make a complete copy of all these databases, and maybe I'll have five or six of those copies. And so you can absolutely use our peer-to-peer transactional replication to do that. But at some point, you might run out of gas there. It's not enough. And then you'll say, okay, I need to scale out even more. Okay, I'm going to break it down by table. And so I'm going to create a dedicated server for each table in the database. And I'm going to use replication to replicate each table from the main database out to these sharded databases. And that might help you for a while. But then even then, as you get more popular, people love our app.
Successful.
I hate that. Then you're like, I've got to now break up within the tables. And so I'm going to shard within the tables. And so the classic example is like, I've got my customer table I talked about pulling from CRM. I'm going to go by the last name, the alphabet. This database server over here replicated is going to have, A through G. And this one's going to have other parts of the alphabet, and we'll break it apart that way. Those are all details.
And to be clear, we're still talking about the same product, right?
We are still talking about SQL Server.
We still didn't buy an extra product.
Jump to one of your favorite, NoSQL flavors du jour.
Exactly.
We are still talking about the SQL Server that everybody knows and loves. The most used database on the planet, actually. It's deployed more than any other database. Yeah. So you'll take, how we love to do things like the 80-20 rule or 90-10? Most people in this world are selecting data. They're getting data. They're fetching data. And then a smaller group are sending data, changing data. So you'll build your architecture with that same mindset. Most of those sharded database copies that you'll have of different tables or subsets of tables will be read-only, download-only tables. It also makes that whole thing a lot more efficient, because most of the mobile devices are going to be requesting data. Most of them are just getting. And so you can just have read-only copies. Then a smaller portion will be designed to be transactional for new data coming up from devices and then going on up to the top of the pyramid. And then the replication engine will keep redistributing that. The other cool thing is, with our transactional replication, if you look on the slide, you might see this lone guy way out here on the far left. That's another replication peer in a totally different data center, because we need to, if we're going to be serious about web scale, internet scale, we need to have geo redundancy. This is stuff you probably are starting to take for granted when you use Azure, because we make it easy in Azure to do that geo redundancy through databases, through our NoSQL stuff there, like Azure Table Storage and things like that, or blobs. So you'll want to do that with SQL Server. So we have that built into the engine, and so you can keep multiple data centers. And I've built this stuff, I'm not just talking and making this stuff up, I've built this for customers, where you have multiple data centers with transactional replication, keeping each other in sync, and then kind of having their own kind of cascading pyramids down in each data center, and the devices are hitting different ones. You know, it's almost like doing, you know, we've done failover stuff in the past. We know what's really good is active-active. That's what we're going to do with replication. So I've belabored the heck out of replication here. Hopefully you get the gist of it. It's something, it's a value add that you have when you own SQL Server, and it's stuff maybe you didn't already know about. Ridiculous scale in servers going out, that as far as you need to just keep doing that. So that's kind of our data tier.
Exactly. We're not going to connect from our mobile device directly to the database.
That's true. We're probably not going to use TDS over 1433 from an iPhone or a Windows phone directly to the database. Good point.
No.
I don't know.
Although we get those questions.
We do get those questions. Can we open up this port and have this binary? Yeah. You know, you may not remember this. The original version of the Compact framework on Windows Mobile actually could talk directly to SQL Server. Not a lot of people used it, but you could do it, you know. If you're on the same network, it worked out okay. Exactly. But if you're out in the wild, it might not work so well. So the next thing we have to do is we got to turn that TDS, that database data, into something that is consumable by mobile devices.
Yeah.
And so, but we also need to keep thinking about scale and speed at every tier. So never give up on this stuff. So the next tier here is we're going to be building our web services. And I mentioned that before, lots of people built SOA infrastructures over the last decade, You know, I think the genesis of .NET was SOAP. You know, when we went from C++ and Visual Basic 6, Windows DNA.
Oh, the DNA, that's even before that,
that just happened, folks. And we went to .NET. It used to, .NET, or an early name, some people might remember Next Generation Windows Services, which is just crazy talk.
It's a bit MTS and distributed COM.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah, it was.
So .NET, though, it was managed code. It was a whole lot of other things, but a lot of the core of what the promise was we were going to make web services easy.
Yes.
That was a big thing. And we absolutely did that with .NET.
WCF, right? Well, we built all this WCF services. ABC. Yeah. Adverse marketing, contract, I still remember that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. ASPX,
and you can
all that stuff.
Configure the heck out of it.
So lots of people did that, and of course, other Java did it, lots of other technologies can do it. And so some companies, I thought more companies would have done this than I realized.
Yep.
I thought lots of people wrapped all their backend systems in SOAP APIs. Turns out not nearly as many as I thought actually did it. I think a lot of them talked about it, but I don't know. They didn't build that.
Yeah, and you showed that approach as well, right? So they build like web services adapt or facades in front of the different backend systems, and then try to build a composite application which connected to all those.
Yeah,
I think the SQL adapters are solving a part of that problem, because sometimes it's hard to build those adapters and scale them as well. So this is a different approach.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sometimes what you said works fine. If it's the right backend server, you're right. You can just put web services in front of it and you're good to go. So here what we're going to do is we're thinking about wireless and we're thinking about mobile devices and we're being thoughtful about people and user experience. I know you're thinking user experience. A lot of people confuse user experience with user interface and how things look. It's part of it, but it's broader. It's also performance and how you get data. So we've got our sharded SQL Server databases to get data from, and we've got our IIS servers. And so, you know, as you might imagine, we're going to have a bunch of load balanced IIS servers to do that. But we also need to keep speed going. You made a comment about the fastest SQL query you can make is the one you don't have to make. Great stuff. So
who comes up with this stuff?
I don't know. It's you. Or do you have a professional writer that was writing stuff for you?
I have great colleagues who help me figure this stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you work, are you a writer for a comedy sketch? No. Anyway, so The other that query that's super fast that you don't have to make is the one where you hit a cache. So part of commonality of a lot of high scale systems that you probably use, different social networks and search engines and things like that, is your query, your request for data, is not hitting a database directly or even a sharded database directly. If it can help it, it's hopefully going to get the answer out of RAM, which is a zillion times. Okay, maybe it's not a zillion. We'll just make up something. But anyway, we know it's quite a bit faster. It could be milliseconds versus seconds versus a select star from blah, blah, blah. I know you would never write a query that said select star. So anyway, we have distributed caching that you already own. It's part of Windows Server. You know, we've had this App Fabric caching now for a few years. It's distributed caching. So it means that if you follow the architectural pattern, a device is requesting some information. The first thing your web service that you build using ASP.NET Web API, and we'll dive into that a little more here in a second, the first thing it should do is it should check the distributed cache. Is the answer to this question in cache, in RAM? If it is, send it back to the device in milliseconds. If it's not, query the database, get the answer, give it to the device, and put the answer in cache. That's your architectural pattern. There's other details of when to expire that, because depending on how fast the data changes, you might want the data not
to. Yeah, you don't want to have different answers when you're hitting another cache, so I don't know the server, so.
Absolutely.
The distributed cache are communicating with each other.
Right, yeah. Right. You know, prior to that, we still encourage you to use different ASP.NET technologies like output caching and stuff like that, which is great, and you should use it. But know that that only works on a server-by-server basis. Yeah. You know, server A might be really cached up and great, server B is starting from scratch. So distributed caching is great. You're going to use our ASP.NET Web API. This is a new feature that came along with MVC4.
Yep.
And, you know, or was it MVC3? I don't know. We got it now. We've had it for a little over a year, a little more than that. Anyway, REST APIs using JSON to serialize the data coming from SQL Server, for instance. This is a wireless friendly way to do things. You know, we know the most friendly way to do it is to use a binary protocol to make things as tiny as possible, because you don't know if you're going to be on GPRS, which is really slow, and then it being intermittent, like you'll have a network dropout, you lose connectivity, it comes back.
That's a great point you bring up, right? People think, well, you have to use standards like WCF, which is an ISO based, a lot of XML. It's pretty bloated, might work on the internal network. When you go mobile, spotty networks, not that great bandwidth, although all the operators have great rumors about LTE all the time.
Yeah.
But in reality, you don't have that much speed. If you want to have a snappy experience.
Absolutely.
Or people have the feeling that it's really fast.
Absolutely.
You have to optimize on the wire as well.
This is how you differentiate yourself as a true enterprise mobile developer from just another developer who's just going to say, well, it works. You know, you're thoughtful of the user experience, which is sometimes how long does it take once I push the button for all these things to
and
happen.
That's the advantage of JSON and REST.
Yeah.
You can really optimize it over the wire by using compression, for example.
Yeah.
And sometimes just hitting a checkbox on the server, which is good because it makes things easy.
Right. We got a great, what's the name of our HTTP portable class library we've got these days? It works on the phone, on tablets.
Yeah, web client.
It works everywhere. Use that, and it supports compression, decompressing, and stuff like that. So turn on compression. There's some checkboxes on IIS. You enable that. You're going to use REST because it's not as big of a wire protocol as SOAP with its envelope and all the other stuff.
Yep.
And JSON, which is a JavaScript object notation, and it's much tinier than XML way of describing the same thing. So you're thoughtful for the user, the wireless network. I might be on the TGV cruising through France at 324 kilometers per hour.
Kilometers an hour.
Yes.
Over there we do kilometers.
That's right, absolutely. And I need to make sure that the train conductor who's synchronizing their data, it's still snappy, even if it's GPRS going fast in and out. So enough of that. So caching is your friend, scaling out is your friend. You're going to scale out your web servers, and you're going to use this new web API. You know, with WCF, you mentioned it a few years ago, we created this REST toolkit for it, and we started to notice more and more developers, web developers and web service developers, kept using REST instead of all the other types of, because WCF is kind of a Swiss Army knife of different technologies. And I guess we got the message loud and clear that the whole internet has moved to REST services and away from SOAP, for the most part. SOAP's still out there and it's fine. And so we built this web API thing, just say, hey, it's simple and it's easy to create these web methods, if you want to call them that, you know, and they're RESTful and they automatically return JSON. And you don't have to do any extra work because, you know, it's all about developer productivity. I need to get the job done as fast as possible. And so I want you to be able to rapidly point and click your way to building these services that are going to be fast and they're going to return the right data. So let's go to the next thing here. So we've seen, we're now at the bottom of kind of our private cloud, and we've pulled data from back-end systems into SQL Server staging tables. Oh, and you know, keep in mind, you know how we're going to speed that part up even more with Hekaton in SQL Server 2014, where we're going to be doing OLTP in memory. So we're going to keep, I feel like we're the kind of the in-memory guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it comes to, because obviously RAM is fast. So if we're doing in-memory ETL to in-memory database, then using, and then scaling out that database, and then having a caching layer, and then load balancing our web servers, you know, we're doing everything we can, absolutely, to give the best performance. And of course, we're connecting those servers with like 10 gigabit Ethernet, right? You know. So the next part is we've got our load balanced IIS servers. You can use our built-in load balancing software that's in Windows Server. You can use appliances.
We can use on-premise. You could use the Azure service if you want to do a cloud solution, or maybe a combination of the two.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You don't need to be only in your own data center.
Absolutely. You know, to do like a 20-second review of how you build this in Azure, back-end systems, you might use our service bus to talk to different things. We actually do have a version of BizTalk in the cloud now, which is interesting to talk to specific things. We could pull things into SQL Azure. We could actually pull things into Azure Table Storage and scale that out in the same way that I've kind of talked about here a little bit. The same web API you build for your on-premise, the identical code is the same thing that would be like as your web role.
Exactly.
Up in Azure. And then Azure, you don't even have to think about publishing it out, you know, like I hear with the multi-channel access gateway. So it's really easy to do in Azure, but you know what? We need to make sure we take care of all our customers.
Exactly.
And you know, most people are still on-premise today in their data centers. Yep. They're moving to the cloud, but they need to have a solution in both places.
And some won't, and some won't ever, so yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. So this last part here, you see at the bottom, you see lots of load balanced IIS servers, and then you kind of see this circular way of, which is probably different than what you normally see when you think of a DMZ, or if I'm outside the United States, it might be a DMZ. So anyway, and I know this could turn into a religious war of how you build your DMZ, but you know, some
how
folks,
many firewalls you want.
Yeah, some people have a front and back firewall, you know, other people do different things, but kind of in between, a lot of things that we've done at Microsoft is that notion of that reverse proxy, you know, or if you're going to do VPN or things, but in between that firewall. Think about this. Most customers use Exchange Server to get their email. Any customer who's ever used Exchange Server probably used a product called ISA Server to securely publish that data. Well, they put ISA Server inside their DMZ and in this kind of configuration that you see here to publish that Exchange Active Sync protocol out to the internet. Well, guess what? You're going to do the same thing. On those IIS servers, it's a virtual directory where these ASP.NET web APIs are. So they're in a virtual directory. You're going to have a virtual IP address on your load balancer that you'll just point to. And then we're going to securely publish it out. But guess what? You probably see something new. You don't see ISA or TMG or UAG. We've got yet another one. How about Web Application Proxy?
Well, there's no acronym for that one.
WAP? Not to be confused with an old way of doing wireless web.
Yeah.
So Web Application Proxy, you'll be thrilled to know. We may have talked about this last week too when we talked about EMM. But that functionality to securely publish CorpNet data out to the internet safely without having to always use a VPN is now a feature of Windows Server 2012 R2.
What? Still no? A new product we need to buy?
No product at all. I know everyone's already fully deployed 2012 R2 already, so it's not a big, no.
We're terrible sales guys.
Okay, anyway, it's built into Windows Server, and you just plop it in there. It's just a role in Windows Server to get that. So it's not a separate server anymore, or do you have to buy? So that's all goodness. And so that's how you're gonna, and just in case you're wondering, you see that multi-channel mobile access gateway, kind of harkens back to the original name for this Magic Quadrant. Multi-channel just means you're building a gateway that will work with any kind of client device, you know, not just a proprietary, it only works with OS 2, because you know how much we run into that these days. So
it's still out there.
It's still out there.
Unfortunately, yeah.
I don't know. I've kind of got a place in my heart for OS
2. Yeah, I know. You have this thing for these old stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
You want to write some Rex code tonight? How about that? Yeah?
Well, you put on the music like a real vinyl player, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I know.
Or vinyl. For that matter.
Vinyl. It's called vinyl?
In the U.S., it's called vinyl.
Okay. Sorry about it.
Kind of like the divinals. You know, so we want to put on some, yeah. Anyway, some new wave music. So if we're going to listen to The Cult or some Ministry or something like that while we write Rex code for OS 2. All right, I digress.
So what's the next step?
Let's get to the next part. The last part is the device part. This is what you've all been waiting for, because it looks like we're inside Windows Phone here. So let's get to the phone part. The phone needs to consume that data. So that data is REST and JSON, and it's the most scalable, performant thing you've ever built in the universe, and now it's coming out, and your devices consume it, because it's published out with the web application proxy, or you can still use ISA or whatever. And so your mobile devices need to grab that data, you're gonna wrap it in SSL, you're gonna use whatever type of authentication, whether it's passing through basic authentication to IIS and securing that with SSL, if you're gonna use, you know, OAuth, SAML tokens, stuff like that, there's a lot of ways to do that. So you'll do the security part, and then you're gonna pull that data down. And this is another thing customers ask about all the time, is taking data offline or being disconnected or things like that. Sometimes people talk to me and they really think it's magic it's like, wow, how do I do that? But you know what, it's a good question. It's an old question, but it's still valid. Until we build the ultimate universal wireless network that works everywhere we walk or go, we're gonna have to worry about disconnected data. Because 1 minute I'm standing here and I've got connection, and if I walk across the room, I might lose connectivity. Yeah. So employees need to be able to get their data and keep working even if I put the phone in airplane mode or I go out in the middle of nowhere. So the concept of pre-fetching data, we've built lots of sync technologies here at Microsoft over the years. Like I mentioned, merge replication, the sync framework, things like that. And you can use those as applicable for different clients. If you want to use them for any client, you know, and for Windows Phone, then you're probably going to use REST and JSON services. And so you'll pull that data down, and then you'll take it offline. And there's a lot of different ways we can do that.
Yeah, and I will put a link in this blog post with some resource where you can dive more into depth about these different solutions which are out there.
SQL CE is still in Windows Phone. You can take data offline. SQLite, we made a commitment to getting SQLite to work on big Windows and Windows Phone everywhere.
Yeah.
And we absolutely have that. And so you can take the data offline and have a local data store. And then also NoSQL. You can store things. The other link, Language Integrated Query, which we came up with a long time ago, long before our communicator that we use for IM and conference calls, allows you to query using SQL-like syntax collections of objects in memory. So you can imagine returning that collection of data coming from that back-end server that maybe queried that customer table. When the ASP.NET Web API serialized that for you, it basically took those rows and columns and just created a collection of JSON objects. Well, when you pull that into Windows Phone, for instance, it just turns into an in-memory collection. You can save that collection to isolated storage, and you can query that using Link and using SQL-like syntax. So that gives you that offline storage deal that you need so that people still are productive, whether there's connectivity or not. So anyway, lots of options to do that, lots of scale out. Obviously, you're gonna have folks hitting other web servers, websites, data centers doing the exact same thing. You'll have the idea of optimistic concurrency, because we're not doing real-time connections to the back-end system. So people are gonna get data, do things offline, send it back up. I guess one other thing to think about, because I'm talking about the notion of an enterprise web API. It's a big thing. Like a lot of web API companies have been acquired recently. It's been a big buzz lately. They do management and things like that. I want to distinguish between just little fine-grained APIs where you call it and get a small answer back versus, and you'll use that sometimes, but versus the idea of an API where it brings back lots more data And the reason why that's important with mobile devices and taking things offline is in this design pattern, you're going to need to prefetch lots more data in advance when you have connectivity, be able to work offline for a long period of time, capture data, modify data locally, and then when you have connectivity, send it back. And so there's a difference between those web APIs you'll build for kind of building your prefetching sync and fine grain APIs that are just.
Yeah, and even though you might have network connectivity and the speed can be really, really good, latency is still high.
So absolutely.
These are the things you have to take into account when you're designing and building this, architecting
absolutely.
Your solution. So, yeah.
And so in the end, if you see the slide, this is what you've got.
You got paid by the circle, man.
I think I did get paid by the circle, you know.
It's acronyms and circles.
Last time was more acronyms, this time definitely more circles, you know, and lots of dotted lines and arrows, which is important stuff. Anyway, this is just kind of a high level logical architecture of how you would build a system like that. What's the great news? The stuff you already own, your Microsoft server infrastructure, the products you own from Microsoft, all this capability is there. It might seem magical that how do I build something that scales like my favorite social network? Well, now hopefully we conveyed that to you. You know that you got the products to do it. And you also know that this is a differentiator for us compared to other meat players. It's also a differentiator for you as a developer. Am I an enterprise mobile app developer or am I a consumer app developer? I know there's a lot of overlap and you're probably gonna do a lot of both. But when it comes to have serious meetings with CIOs and IT folks at different large companies around the world, this is the differentiator. This is what makes your system work and why it makes your mobile stuff a success versus something
exactly.
that runs out of gas.
And that's where our viewers are differentiating as well, right? You have the skill set, you have the knowledge for doing this. You might be familiar with all those building blocks. You know things like how to connect these different systems. How do you work with security, for example?
Right.
How do you flow an identity for your user towards all the systems so they only can see the information they are allowed to see?
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of architecture, design patterns, and skills necessary to build this kind of products. And that's where you guys come in. And we provide the tools, the toolkits, the developer tools. So this is really interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks for, I know it's like a summary. We can talk and the entire day about this stuff, and someday we might.
Maybe we'll do a 30-hour talk and really be standing the whole time.
Exactly.
I might get taller. Who knows?
Even, might get taller. So thanks for watching. If you have questions, please leave the comments or contact us through the details we mentioned in this post. And see you next time.
Bye.